Welcome to Season 5 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Joris Peels and Brent Wright. We're bringing in industry experts, patients, vendors, and thought leaders to share their stories, insights, and visions for the future. Whether you're a clinician, a researcher, a vendor, or someone with a personal interest in the field, we have something for you. Join us as we delve into how advancements in personalized healthcare and 3D printing are revolutionizing the industry and changing the way we approach the design, production, and delivery of prosthetic and orthotic devices.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and this is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. Hi, Brent. How are you doing?
Hey, Joris. I'm doing well. Can you believe we're heading into season five and we're about to tap 50 episodes? That's pretty crazy.
That's very, very crazy that we're about to do 50 episodes of this. I've really enjoyed this, actually. I really, really have. And I'm so glad we've been able to make it happen with all this time and all these guests and stuff. And I've learned so much. So super happy.
What would you say has been the biggest surprise to you during this? We've got, you know, these 50 episodes under our belt with tons of guests. What's been one of the biggest things that's stood out that you have learned?
First off, like, you guys are a very diverse bunch. You guys are all over the place. I mean, we almost have had nobody that, like, you know, kind of like, in college, I kind of decided on this and I did it. You know, there's always either a really inspirational story or this super crazy story. Like, I was a sound engineer and then I was a parachutist and then I ended up, you know, or a chance meeting or something like that. So that's the first thing. Compared to other like groups of individuals, like, there's a lot of more diversity, a lot more crazy career stories, a lot more like second generation stuff and all this, and people doing that. That really surprised me. I didn't know it was like that. And the thing that I really didn't appreciate enough is just how this market is dynamic, because there's a lot of like really small players in it. Really, I didn't really appreciate as much that there were so many independent businesses in this market, as opposed to many other markets where you see a lot more chains or a lot more like multinationals and conglomerates and stuff like that. And the other thing that really still surprised me, the fact that, you know, we talk a lot about the digitization side of things, you know, with scanning, 3D printing, that kind of stuff, but things like finite element analysis or things like simulation software and stuff, that's just not coming up. I mean, it's not even, I just realized this the other day. It's not even coming up in conversations. All this engineering software, this ANSYS stuff and all this, it's just not making headways in the market as much as I would expect, given what you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. We have had literally zero people talk about the finite element analysis, which is very interesting. Yeah. But, you know, when we've done some of our stuff internally with that, the reality still is, and this is what's been interesting through having some engineers on the program and such, is you are still trying to hit a moving target, you know, a living, breathing, changing person. And it's hard to quantify that. And, you know, and that theme keeps on coming up and up again. You know, you can analyze the mess out of something, but until you actually put it on somebody, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think, and maybe it's too difficult, or maybe they haven't looked at it enough. So I think that's really I really didn't expect that. I thought there'd be just some, like, you know, I don't know, some engineering analysis tool for this market or something like that, like you have from a lot of other ones. And the other thing that really surprised me is also kind of the fact that you have so many people in here that are inventors, that are really inventing stuff and coming up with the solutions and inventing something that maybe just for one patient, and just how unique all the treatments and the processes and these injuries are. I kind of going into this thought that it was pretty standard, you know, that it was pretty much, you know, and I just really have been surprised how custom each of these, the treatment is, the relationship with the patient. You know, sometimes you have patients that really own the process, you know, that are really putting themselves in the driver's seat. And other ones are just like, well, you tell me what to do. And also just how, you know, biomechanically, let's say, how unique these guys are as well. So that also really surprised me.
Wow. Yeah. And you know what else is surprising? We have sponsors. We started sponsors, you know, with Mike from Filament Innovations. sponsoring us last the end of last season for the last six episodes. And we actually have two new sponsors for this season, and I'm really excited to get further into that.
Okay, I'm so excited about that. Can we talk a little bit about who are our sponsors so far then?
So Advanced 3D is our sponsor for all of season. Advanced 3D is dear and dear to my heart because it's really? I'm a part of this company. And okay. So what's been interesting through this whole process of 3D printing, specifically with powder-based fusion, is what is effective in helping patients become more comfortable. And so we had Richard, the marathoner, on a few episodes ago, and I highly suggest people listening to that one. But we did something for him out of a TPU, multi-jet fusion TPU, that allowed him to run a marathon. And so what we have found with Advanced 3D is we want to make that technology and workflow and that sort of thing available to other clinics. And so we're actually going to be bringing that out very soon. And so that allows somebody to hop into the multi-jet fusion 3D printing with very much not a lot of risk. And when I say not a lot of risk, because it's a flexible inner socket, it's not the socket itself. So you can still traditionally fabricate a socket, but use this flexible inner. And I believe that patients will really enjoy the comfort with it. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, throughout the season, we'll be kind of letting out some other nuggets. But this idea of flexible inner sockets, and we've talked about this before, you know, with the TPU, really can make a difference in the comfort of some of these patients.
Okay. So are you guys like a service for this? Are you a service for anything? Can I just like tell you, hey, I want you to print this part. How does it work?
Yeah, we can print anything. We print PA-12. We do color PA-12 on the MultiJet Fusion 580. We also do TPU and PA-11. And then we do some FDM as well for test sockets and such. So I would say definitely a contract manufacturer, but we don't only do O&P. So we do some airplane parts, automotive, consumer goods, reverse engineering. So the whole gamut. So people also approach us if they have product ideas or something like that to move forward. So I'm just really excited about us moving forward. I think it's definitely time for the industry to move forward, and I'm looking forward to where this goes.
Okay, awesome. And our other sponsor, who are they?
Yep. So the other sponsor is Jess Poto, and Jess Poto is just now coming to the U.S. market. They have been doing automated foot orthoses for quite a while now, and it's really neat. And we're actually definitely believers in that software, and you can do a set of foot orthoses in a matter of minutes, whether it be FDM, powder-based fusion, or for more traditional carving models and such. So really excited to have them on board, and as the season progresses, we're going to see them move more and more into like AFOs and things of that nature as well. So excited to have them aboard.
Okay, super cool. All right, so finally we can get to our guest.
I know, that was a long one. Sorry, Ahmad, for keeping you waiting. Yes, really excited about having Ahmad Najwa on our show today. He is with Kenny Orthopedics, and we had Jen actually on from Kenny Orthopedics a couple episodes ago. And she alluded to Ahmad being the brainchild behind some of the 3D printing stuff that's going on inside of Kenny Orthopedics. He does some really amazing things in FDM, and they run a filament innovations machine. No surprise there. And so I really look forward to hearing kind of his thought process. And then his journey into the field is a very, very unique one. And I'm looking forward to hearing about that as well, and letting our listeners hear about it as well. So I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah, welcome to the show, Ahmad. This is a really, obviously I need to ask you this. Like, so how did you get involved with OMP? How'd you get here?
Well, my senior year in college, when I was doing my capstone project, my advisor, basically, this was kind of his message to our entire class. He was like, if money is not an object, if you're not looking to get paid, basically, what would you want to do with your life? And growing up, I grew up as a refugee in Pakistan. I'm originally from Afghanistan. My father worked for Red Cross there. So I saw a lot of amputees because there's a lot of landmines in Afghanistan. So there's a lot of, especially children, amputees. So that kind of, just thinking about that made me want to do something in the orthotic and prosthetic field, which I didn't know anything about at that point. So I did some research. And for my capstone project, I, speaking of finite element analysis, I 3D printed two prosthetic feet, energy return keels, and did some mechanical testing on them to see if they would survive daily use. This was in 2015. At that point, the only materials I had access to were PLA and AVF, which both of them failed. But that was kind of my entry to the field. And once I graduated, I kind of looked around for some jobs. I live in Kentucky, so not a huge population. And I didn't really find anything in the field. So I just worked for Xerox for a year in a customer service role. And then just looking around for jobs because I wasn't happy in that position. I was lucky enough to find an assistant tech position in Kenny Orthopedics here in Kentucky. And I started here in 2017, and here we are.
Okay, super cool. And day to day, you know, what's your evolving with the additive 3D printing thing? Is it for you? Is it just like a daily tool, or is it something you use every once in a while? Or what's your
It's a daily tool. So Jen touched on it in her when she was your guest as well, and this was kind of her project. She pushed this through. In 2020, before we purchased the 3D printers, I was, so I work in a central fabrication facility, and I was just doing traditional fabrication of orthotics and prosthetics. But when they got the 3D printer, they were like asking around, like, hey, do we have someone who's a little familiar with the technology? And my supervisor, Shane, he knew about my college background, so he kind of nominated me. And currently, I'm just working with our 3D printers. We have two Icarus machines from Filament Innovations that we use for our diagnostic sockets. And then we have some small desktop printers that we kind of do random things on. So currently my day-to-day work is totally basically revolves around the 3D printers.
Okay. So one thing I really want to figure out, because the central fab thing is not familiar to a lot of people. We all think it's going to be much more familiar to everyone going forward, but how does that work? Is it some guy sends you something, you've got either some physical scans or you've got an email or something. How do you make sure there's a process around that, that you know what you need to make and that you can make that thing and you have enough information, you know what I mean?
That's a great question. So we kind of had to build that up from ground up. So Kenny Orthopedics has 19 clinical locations in 3 states. So we had to figure out a way to kind of make a uniform process for everyone to follow. So we basically developed work orders for each type of device and kind of standardized them. So we get scans along with the work orders that are pretty detailed that let us know what the practitioner wants out of the end device.
And what are some things that are on there? I mean, how do you determine, for example, you know, is it an engineering drawing? Is it a lot of description? Is it like a questionnaire?
So it's an orthometry form. So we'll have some measurements because we use the majority of the scans that we get are from it's kind of a friend and own, you know, using the iPhone's front facing camera. So we require measurements with that because those scanners are great, but sometimes there's a little bit of variation between the scan and the actual measurements. So we ask for measurements along with the specific modifications that some practitioners would like us to do. So they would tell us the location for the modification, how much, they would like it to be. And at the same time, Jen kind of touched on this as well. We have some practitioners who kind of want a more active role in the modification process. So they might, I might get a fully modified scan that they would just let me know what type of suspension they would need. So the suspension would be how the limb, the residual limb, would stay in the diagnostic socket. And I would print that for them. And some people would send, some practitioners send a raw scan of the residual limb, and then they would specify what specific modifications they want done to it. So we have different workflows to get to kind of the same end result. But the work orders we've kind of created kind of cater to everyone's needs.
Okay. Well, that sounds really good. And then, So you're saying that I'm really interested. You said that you use the desktop 3D printers. Like, first off, which ones do you have, if you can tell us, and what materials are you using on those, and yeah, what do you use them for?
So, we kind of got into it. I have to credit Derek, Derek Schmidt. You guys have had him on as well from Limit Lattice. I've watched some of his videos, what he was doing, and he was at the time using an Artillery X2 printer, and that's kind of what we went with as the first purchase as well, specifically for the build volume. So we have four of those currently, and the most recent purchase that I'm still kind of learning is an FL Sun B400, a Delta printer. So we have five of those, and then two of the Icarus printers. Oh. Currently, we're using the Artillery printers for foot orthotics. And I'm currently working on printing flexible liners using very short PPU on them as well, and potentially using them for covers, for cosmetic covers, some upper extremity flexible liners, and diagnostic devices. Some stuff for partial hands. The materials we use on them are range from PLA, TPU, PolyPro, PETG, a little bit here and there, but it's mostly TPU.
Okay. And then what kind of, and whose TPU? Is there a special one that's really good, or is it kind of like a commodity, or is it like only one company's will do, you know?
So the if it's just TPU, I think it's 92A, short 92A. I mostly get it from Matter Hackers. It's their brand. But very short is ColorSat only. That's what I'm using most of these days. It's their brand, the very short TPU.
Yeah, exactly. So very short is, of course, yeah, Brent is a mega fan of this stuff as well. Yeah. And do you think it has a foaming quality, essentially, right? Do you use that? Do you actually use that day to day, or?
Yes. So it's one of the people I follow on LinkedIn, they commented at one point, they were like, it's very printing very short is like the closest you can get to printing fabric, basically. It kind of feels like you're printing fabric versus rubber. So it's what I'm mostly using day to day currently, like I mentioned earlier, for foot orthotics. And now we're kind of getting into some flexible liners with them too. And I do use the foaming properties. It's a really hard filament to kind of tame. So you kind of have to be, watch out with your flow rates, the temperature, cooling, the nozzle distance from the bed, everything affected. So there's a lot of variables, but the potential is great. You can do so much with it. And I don't think I've kind of scratched the surface with it so far, so it's definitely a great material.
Yeah, I just think it's really exciting because it's a foaming material, so you can actually you can change the dynamics of this foaming, right? So you can foam it more or less depending on some settings.
Yeah, and this goes from I think 92A to 55A short hardness depending on the temperature and extrusion multiplier.
Yeah, so and that's in the same printer with the same material, and you could just vary that gradually, even from the front of a model to the back of the model, that kind of thing. And it's just that was one. It was one of the things, a lot of the innovations in 3D printing you kind of expect, and they're coming for years. And this is one of the things like, oh wow, it came out of nowhere for me.
No, definitely. And I wish I had access to some of these materials back when I was in school, because after I graduated, I was away from 3D printing for 3 or 4 years. And it was kind of funny. One day they brought some 3D printed diagnostic sockets and they were showing it around. And they asked me, they were like, how long do you think this took to print? So I was like in the 2015 mindset. I was like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 hours, 10 hours. They were like, printed an hour. So that was kind of like my first introduction to high flow. So the field, like, it changes. I wouldn't even say year to year. It's monthly. Like, every month something new comes out.
Yeah, totally. And what's your advice on, I think there's some of the really practical stuff. I would never get, like, the cheapest PLA or the cheapest PETG or something, because, like, you tend to have more problems with it because there's, like, the dimensional tolerances and all this. The material gets more clogged. Would that be the same advice, or would you go, like, you know, you don't have to get ultra premium, but I just wouldn't go bargain basement shopping for material personally.
No, I agree. Dimensional stability is not a, I would say it is a concern, but it's not a major concern for us because we're not printing things that are very small. So the tolerances can be a little bigger, but I would basically, advise people to find like one filament that they have good results with and try to stick with it. Like it doesn't help to have 8 or 9 different brands of PLA on your shelf because the settings or even colors for what might work for one might not work for something else. And my whole goal working in a central fabrication environment is to kind of set and forget things. Start a print and then not have to come back every 10-15 minutes to check on it to kind of get the optimum settings and then use that daily.
Yeah, totally. You don't want settings to drift, or you don't want any kind of crazy. And of course, I think this one thing I was just thinking about, actually, one of the biggest, if we would run printers 24/7, I don't think we'd have a lot of problems. But on the FDM front, if we stop something and come back a week later, then we'll find that everything is all gunked up and nothing works. Do you have any advice for that kind of thing to really evade error? Do you do a lot of like maintenance or a lot of calibration, that kind of stuff? Or
definitely. So one thing with the cheaper kind of desktop printers is like bed leveling and things. Like you kind of have to do that every other day or so because the tensions might change or the screws might loosen up or stuff. So you definitely kind of have to be on top of that. In terms of like if you're doing a 30, 40, or 50-hour print, depending on the material you might need. Like if you're printing TPU, you might want to print it from a dryer. So like have your spool inside a dryer while you're printing it. Because if it's a 50-hour print, the TPU can absorb moisture from there throughout the print. It's not as bad as nylon or something, but you still kind of want to give yourself the best chances for success by kind of mitigating anything that might happen.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think the same thing with storage, storing it in desiccant or closed bags.
Yes,
or
definitely.
Yeah. Something like that is really, really important. The dryer is really interesting because that hasn't come up, but it's, on some high-end systems, there's a dryer on board, like on the mini factory systems and stuff like that. Do you have a good brand of like those loose ones? Because I remember people used to sell them, but now there isn't really, do you have a good brand of a filament dryer or something like that? Or
So for the smaller printers, we use the eBOS small dryers. I know Sublu has one, so they're mostly Chinese brands. For our PETG, for the Icarus printers, we basically purchased a food dehydrator, a giant one. And I every day before I start any prints, or the day before, I dry all the all the PETG for 2 to 3 hours before the print. So it's definitely good practice, other than if you have like PLA or PolyPro or something, to make sure your filament is dry.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a great idea. And also just to have a more constant environment, a constant, just eliminate variables. I think it's really, really great. And if a lot of problems with brittle, even PLA, a lot of problems with brittleness and stuff are avoided as well.
Yep.
So that's good. And how about like, do you hack that? So these entry-level printers, I think it's really amazing, by the way. We can buy like a $180 printer and then actually use it in a professional environment, by the way. Whereas, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that, you were buying a $2,000 printer and it didn't work half the time, right? So I think that's pretty amazing. But did you guys spend a lot of time hacking these things, upgrading them with different nozzles and things like that, or are they just bog standard artillery printers?
So initially they were just standard printers, and I have to credit Derek here again. He had some tutorials about upgrading it to like an all metal hot end. So I've done that on all of them. They all have all metal hot ends now. I've also upgraded the firmware on some of them to take them up to 300T. I haven't actually done a print on it yet, but I'm hoping to do a nylon carbon fiber print on one of them one of these days. I've heard horror stories about the material, so I'm looking forward to getting into that. But you can definitely, that's the best thing about these printers is, that's one advice I would give if anyone wants to get a desktop printer, try to get one with a large community. Something like Creality or Artillery has a pretty good community. That way, whatever issue or problem or upgrade you might want to make, someone else has already done that. So you can just follow that, their footsteps, and increase the capabilities of your machine. So they're very easy to upgrade that way.
Okay, cool. And what kind of software do you guys use?
For slicing or modifying?
Yeah, both. I'll just start with slicing. What do you use for slicing and stuff?
So my daily driver is Simplify 3D. I use a Prism Slicer and Super Slicer a little bit. I've gotten into Kiss Slicer a little bit after watching some of Brent's stuff. It's got some crazy features that I wish some of the other slicers would have. I tend to stay away from Cura. The user interface and layout is just, it just doesn't jive with me. I can't get around to using it as much. For modifying, currently we're using Willowood's Omega, but we're looking at some other alternatives as well. So it's an OMP specific program. I also use Mesh Mixer quite a bit.
Yeah. I think we're
here we go. My goodness.
Nothing.
And then now, are you going to talk about Vase Mode now too, Yoris? Go ahead. Talk about Mesh Mixer.
I like Vase Mode too. I like
how awesome too. Vase Mode is. There you go.
Thank you. See, I knew he was a smart man. See, you can tell. No. I'm just saying, everybody runs Mesh Mixer. This is hysterical. Yeah. I need to tell Autodesk because they need to know.
Yeah,
this is like keeping the whole O&P industry afloat.
When I found out that they're not kind of supporting it in essence, so there are no updates or anything to it, but it's one of those programs where I find something new or learn something new every day. Like the community for it is great, and for a free program, it's extremely powerful. I definitely like using Mesh Mixer.
Amai, that's super cool about some of the stuff that you're doing with the FDM and really all the different materials and what you've done to make some of these printers run, and then obviously along with the Icarus and such. Now, with you guys growing the way you are and up to close to 40 clinicians plus, at your place, I mean, you've got to be tracking this somehow. Are you doing that with your electronic medical records? Are you doing that by hand? How are you doing that?
That's a good question, Brent. That's something that kind of I had to work on over the course of this process. Initially, I was doing it by hand, but once our volume increased, I realized that wasn't feasible. So I currently do it in an Excel spreadsheet. I try to keep a record of every print, in terms of how long it took, what material was used, what batch of filament was used, if I ended up reprinting it for any reason, why, and what the solution was, how I came to the fix. I think that'll is very useful in case you have a case which might be similar to an odd print you did in the past, and you want to go back and look at your settings in terms of what you had to change. And that's part of the reason I like Simplified 3D as well, because every file that you save for every print, it's saved with settings specific to that print. So you can go back, look at those settings, and find out what you did to make that specific print work.
I think that's a great idea. A great thing. Some people do this in a, writing like literally a logbook, like a physical logbook, mm-hmm. or Excel, Word. And I think it's a really great practice to institute because you can find out so much about, you know, good vendors or what filament keeps failing or, you know, what we keep doing. Or maybe sometimes it's just a file that keeps failing a print. So you figure out that it's not the printer at all. It's a file. So I think it's a fantastic bit of advice that everyone should do. Everyone. And you know, with regards to, you know, the kind of perfecting 3D printing, do you have any best practices for that about you doing it internally for yourself? How do you figure out what the best settings are? You're just like making it up as you go along, which, hey, in fact, a lot of people do, including me. Yeah. Or do you try to make that more systematic as well?
So usually every filament that you get comes with presets within the slicer. And that's, I would recommend everyone to kind of start with those presets. Use that as your base. But depending on the shape, what you're printing, those might change. So I have like a stack of test cubes sitting next to me right now that I've been printing for very sure. So it helps to have small shapes that you print with different settings within your slicer to see what might be the optimum setting for what you need. And that might be different from shape to shape. That's one thing with FDM is what might work for a cylindrical shape might not work for another shape that has a lot of overhangs. So some of it is trial and error. But you definitely have to look at what's established already and kind of use that as a springboard and go from there.
Okay. Yeah, because just like if the people, like maybe there's people listening that aren't really new to 3D printing, there's a lot of like feedback loop effects with you hire, like if you raise the temperature or if you change your extrusion or, all sorts of settings like have an effect on each other. So it's not always very straightforward you know.
No, it's all interlinked. You can't change one lever and expect everything else to be the same. For example, the other day, I was printing something and I thought it would be a good idea to combine different layers of supports into one layer just to save time. But that ended up overheating the print because the printer was printing multiple layers at the same time before going to the support. I hope that makes sense. But that's something that I wasn't thinking of, that, oh, the hot end would spend more time on the actual print itself, leading to it retaining heat longer. So I would have to change the cooling. So things like that, you don't realize until you're actually printing the device itself. Everything is interlinked. No variable can be changed without affecting multiple other variables.
Yeah, totally. Super well said. That's really good. And what do you think, how do you think it's going to go from here? I mean, if we're looking at, you know, just going from printing, like, you know, testing parts and printing check sockets and stuff, how do you think 3D printing is going to evolve?
So currently, like you mentioned, we're using our Icarus printers for diagnostic sockets. We are using the material Mike Gorski developed with Mitsubishi CPX for some preparatory devices, but I do see more and more definitive devices be fabricated with additive manufacturing, especially with multi-jet fusion, SLS, things of that nature. And this is where I'm glad Brent is working with advanced 3D, because we need that. That's one thing I think we have kind of a lack of in the field is service bureaus that are knowledgeable in ONP. They know the terms, they know the devices, they know what they should look like, because that could be a problem where if you're using a generic service bureau and you send them a scan that you've created in Fusion or another modification program, they'll print it as it comes in. They don't know if anything is off about that device, if anything doesn't look good. So that's where I think advanced 3D will definitely make a big impact. And that's where I think if we have more and more service bureaus like that, that'll increase the adoption of definitive devices much more.
Okay. And in terms of the technology, do you see it, how does it have to evolve to do that? You know, we can do stuff like people can do stuff, but how do you really, do you see any kind of blockades for you in the technology itself that need to go away, need to change? Or?
So the two biggest ones that I see are the fabrication times and the price for the devices themselves. So like I mentioned earlier, I work at a central fabrication facility where our turnaround time for most devices is 5 working days. But if a tech is free and we get a work order for a transtibial definitive a composite socket, that can be done within 3 to 4 hours from start to finish. Whereas if I'm using multi-jet fusion, it might take a day or so and post-processing after that. So I think those are kind of the two biggest roadblocks is the fabrication time and the price point. One thing I would add as well is a lot of additive manufacturing that the materials used themselves might not be as the people in the O&P field might not be familiar with them as much in terms of like multi-jet fusion using PA11, PA12, what the difference between the two is, what characteristics you can get from one versus the other, or PA glass filled or PACF. So that's another roadblock, I think, is the lack of familiarity with the materials used in additive manufacturing within the O&P field. But that I think is improving over time, especially as more and more people are getting into it and sharing their experiences.
Okay. Well, Ahmad, thank you for sharing your experience with us. This is really valuable. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, guys. I would like to say I really enjoy listening to your guys' podcast. It's kind of my morning ritual now. It helps me through my work. So thanks for what you're doing. It's a great resource, and I recommend everyone to kind of go back and, if they haven't already, listen to your previous episodes.
Yeah, thanks a bunch. Thank you so much. And Brent, thanks a lot for being here today, man.
Oh, this was great. Yeah, and Ahmad, thank you for sharing everything that you do. I know it's not always the easiest thing to do because you're buried with the work of a whole bunch of other people. But when you do share, I really appreciate that, especially when I see it on LinkedIn or how you share and prep for stuff at the conferences as well. I think that's pretty awesome. So thank you. And thank you for sharing all this for our listeners. It could be a springboard for somebody to say, hey, finally, I will take a step forward into 3D printing.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching today. This is the Orthotics and Prosthetics podcast with you today. And thank you for being here.